Helper by Stephen Quantick. Read by Malk Williams. I want to help you. Please let me help you. How have we survived so long as a species when we refuse help so readily? I mean, the human race can't move forwards unless we help each other. I saw a woman pushing twins in a pram. She was carrying her shopping for that week and somehow trying to manoeuvre herself into a lift. She was nice, she was polite, but when I asked if I could help, she said no thank you and continued to struggle. If I pushed that pram and its precious occupants down a staircase, she wouldn't have any trouble asking for help, would she? I suppose it was this that led me to assisting the dead with their problems, but I'm getting ahead of myself. I've always been very intuitive about what people need. The dead are attracted to how alive we seem. Some of them don't know they're dead, and when they look at us, they see something that doesn't quite add up. Some poltergeists are the equivalent of poking us with a stick to see if we're real, to see why we're different from them. They're trying to figure out if they're alive. Sometimes, when they find out they're dead, they dissipate to be at peace. Then there are the other times. I'm a health and safety inspector for the company I work for, so I spend a lot of time in condemned buildings. I was in a bell tower when I first sensed someone standing behind me who was not there. At first, I dismissed the feeling, like when you're alone at home. You walk into a room and start as you see out of the corner of your eye that someone is sitting there, waiting for you. And then you look properly, and it's a pile of clothes. But a pile of clothes doesn't breathe down your neck. A pile of clothes doesn't fill your head with screaming. And in that bell tower, everything I thought I knew about the universe changed. The tangible and the intangible. The spiritual and the physical. And I clutched at my head in pain as the screaming rose in volume, and I realized whatever this was, it didn't care if I believed in ghosts. And by sheer instinct, I cried out, "Stop!" And it did. And I took a breath. I let myself rest for a moment, tried to calm myself in spite of the frantic twitching of my heart. And I tried to consider what I would do if someone intruded in my home. I'd scream. I'd make a fuss. And if I was the intruder, and I didn't mean any harm, I'd assert myself as non-threatening. So I told it, "You want to know why I'm here? I'm here to condemn this building as unsafe." And I don't know why I said it, but I added, "And I'm here to help you." I could feel how angry it was. It swung the bell wildly back and forth until it cracked against the wall and fell hundreds of feet onto the floor of the church. I tried to stay calm, and in my mind I frantically cycled through everything I'd ever read or seen about ghosts, and I remembered something about unfinished business. I think I got that one from Casper, and I thought that it was worth a try. So when everything finally went quiet, I told it as gently and kindly as I could that it was dead, and I gave it permission to move on. Everything went quiet, and I heard a beautiful sound, like someone exhaling, like someone so relieved to finally be in bed after a long day, the longest possible day. I knew I needed to do this again, so whenever I was somewhere old, I listened, and I started to learn how to hear them speak. This is how I know about the poltergeists. "There's something not right about you," one of them said. I couldn't just bluntly tell him I was alive and he wasn't, so we talked for a while, and he figured out what he wanted for himself. A sigh of relaxation, and he was gone, at peace. I had a friend in the council, Timothy, and even outside of work hours I'd go to him and he'd search his files and look for condemned properties for me to carry out my good work. We'd while away our evenings, imagining the possibilities. Imagining emptying the world of restless spirits, travelling to the ends of the earth to meet their needs and resolve their lack of meaning. Who else gets the opportunity to have every chapter of their life close in satisfaction, he'd say. And who would imagine that we could even find that in death? And as the months and years went by, giving the living what they wanted seemed far less satisfying. It didn't mean I stopped trying to do good for my fellow man, but I must admit the dead began to prove themselves more worthy of my attention. At least they didn't have any issues with asking for help. Then there was that basement. Timothy gave me the address, citing some old news stories reporting intruders, scraping noises, screaming. As I descended the stairs, there was a heavy atmosphere, an unrelenting sense of need that had gone unfulfilled for a very long time. The presence I found there slid into my subconscious and in a frantic, rattling whisper told me that the woman he loved had been taken away from him. In this case, I knew that explaining to the poor unfortunate soul that he was dead would do little good. "I know I'm dead," he said, "but I can't stop." This happened from time to time. They needed closure with someone they cared about. I remember a number of occasions where their relatives were still living, so I'd arm myself with information only their dead relative would know, and I would persuade them to come and meet with their dearly departed. And when the dead had spoken their piece and the living had shed their tears, they gave a sigh of relaxation, and they were gone. So I knew I needed to find this girl. He told me he died 10 years ago, that this girl had only been a young girl of about 14 when she was taken from him. I assumed it was because she was deemed too young for him, so I followed my usual course of action. I returned to Timothy, and he looked over the archives. Aside from the news articles he'd cited in sending me there, there was nothing about the basement, literally nothing. Any additional records had been misplaced or removed and not returned, or destroyed, which happens more often than you'd think, to be honest. My friend was able to turn up one tiny scrap of information, a home address, and sure enough, when I knocked on the door, there she was. I found the girl to be extremely open-minded, considering the circumstances, and within a week I was leading her into the basement. She took in her surroundings, and then she seemed to recognise them. Her eyes widened. Her breathing shallowed. She tried to keep her voice calm as she turned and spoke to me. "What are we doing in this place?" Sometimes the living become very unsettled when they sense the raw, untamed presence of the dead, so I explained to her the presence I had felt and that it had asked me to bring her here. She began to cry, but it didn't seem to be out of gratitude. A cold feeling crept into my stomach.
"What are you going to do to me?"
And before I could answer, the voice echoed through my skull, its previous warmth replaced with malice and poison.
"Kill her! Give her to me! She is mine!"
Helping the dead was one thing, but this was a step too far. But as I turned to face the door, Timothy was standing there. His face looked different. He was smiling the most unusual smile. A satisfied grin with that same malice, that same poison. A smile shouldn't make you feel like you want to crawl away into the corner. Something was wrong. Before I could say a word, he reached into the room and pulled the door shut, and with some finality I heard a bolt slide across, sealing me inside the room with the hysterical young lady and whatever foul thing Timothy was apparently in league with. The poor girl hurled herself against the door, drawing blood from her clenched fists as she pounded on it, begging to be released. But it was no good, and I remembered that Timothy had only told me the records were gone. He'd brought me this girl's address, the only bit of evidence needed to lead us both here. This was a trap. I could barely understand her above her wails of despair, but it seemed that whoever this presence was had taken her to this very basement when she was a little girl, and it was in the process of her rescue that the presence had been killed.
"You said you would help me."
He was right. I promised. And I had to keep my word, because if I didn't, we'd both die here. If I didn't, I'd never be able to help the dead move on again. If I didn't, I would die. And I didn't want to die. Not like this. There were loose bricks scattered around the room. The girl was so busy trying to open the door, she didn't notice that I had taken one in my hand. I pictured all of those that I had helped to find rest, all of those that I would help to find rest in the future, and I let the thought of all the good I would do push me into action. I tried to push back my revulsion. I tried not to think about what I was doing as I raised my arm and allowed the momentum of the brick to carry it into the back of her head. She screamed again, her delicate blonde hair quickly cascading into blood red, and I told her I was sorry. Another strike. This time the trauma to her skull took away her sight, and she feebly flailed at me, unable to find me. Another blow to her forehead. This time there was a crunch, like standing on a packet of crisps, and I told her that this was for the greater good, that I was special, that I needed to live on. But she couldn't hear me. Her twitching leg was the only sign that she had once been alive. The brick was covered in shards of skull and brain tissue. I thought I was going to be sick, or scream, or both. I felt suddenly warm, and I realized I'd pissed myself. Then a sigh of relaxation, and I expected the spirit to be gone. But he wasn't gone.
"I can't stop," he said. "I need another."
Timothy opened the door, and with the rationality with which one would explain that we need to pop to the shops for milk, explained that this was our chance to make a difference. He had come to idolize the dead, and I was their slave. He showed me where to dispose of the body, a place doubtlessly selected by our mutual friend in the basement. And as she slipped out of sight into the abyss, I was certain that I saw 100 lifeless pairs of eyes staring up at us. 6 months later, I came to recognize his type, and he didn't have to tell me where to find the girls anymore. Blonde, blue eyes, innocent smile. They reminded him of the daughter he lost. I didn't want to ask how he lost her. I was just trying to help. And with everybody that I hid, I hoped it would be enough, that he would finally pass on. But he couldn't stop. Not ever. And I promised I'd help. No. More than that. I wanted to live.